Do you need a break?
You read my mind.
Come with me.
Happy Easter to all of you, and welcome to another episode of The Break. I'm your host, Father Roderick. I'm a priest and I'm a geek, and I love to talk about everything that I get excited about, from faith to video games, from movies and TV shows to the latest technology. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. This episode is made possible thanks to my wonderful community over at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And I have some really big news. I am currently working on two communities. I'm going to move to a new website environment. In fact, I've already been building a website, and it's so much more than just a website. I'm also building a community environment, and I am going to be able to do so much more there than I can currently do with Discord and Patreon and the various channels that I use to stream and to post my podcasts. I'm super excited about that. There's much more that I explain about those two communities on this week's episode of The Walk, which is my other podcast. So if you go and search for The Walk with Father Roderick, wherever you get your podcast, you may want to listen to this latest episode. I think it's maybe one of the most substantial changes that I've made to the way I do my ministry online in the past 10 years. But it is going to open up so many possibilities. The gist of what I explain on The Walk is that I am going to create two membership communities. So it's similar to what I do on Patreon, but it's much more powerful because I can, on my new website, create an entire support community where it's much easier to find the information that you need. Plus, I'm going to be posting monthly masterclasses for the members of each community. There will be a monthly live Q&A coaching session. So it's much easier for me in that way to really help my audiences. Now, what are these two communities going to be about? One is going to be about my own specialty. As you know, I've been working in the media ever since I was ordained a priest. I studied social communications in Rome, at the oldest university in the world, but they have the latest progress, the latest insights when it comes to mass communication and how to use the media. I've been working myself in the media since 2005. I've done radio, television work, and of course, the podcast, video on YouTube, TikTok, blogging, writing books. And there is so much experience and knowledge that I can share that I decided to create a community, an online community, especially for people that want to learn how to get better, how to master expert skills when it comes to creating content, whether it is writing a book or filming a documentary or just making YouTube shorts or Instagram shorts, photography, podcasting, all that. So that is a high-value community, and there will be several ways in which you can join that community as a member. You can also get coaching, both group coaching and individual coaching, in combination with that particular community. So that's one audience that I want to help. And then the other community is going to focus on something that I talk a lot about in my podcast, and that is personal growth. How can you grow in life? How do you overcome the struggles in your life? You know that in this podcast, I love to talk about movies and TV shows, especially from the angle of what can we learn from these stories? How can they apply to our own lives? Why do we connect with these stories so much? And it's a perspective that I am also using on my YouTube and on my TikTok channel. It's not just information. Usually when I get the most reactions is when it is about a topic that is close to home, that really I can relate to. And my podcast, The Walk, is entirely dedicated to personal growth, be it in your in your health journey, in your personal life, managing stress, managing expectations, managing your inner voice, and also your walk in faith, your ideals. What do you live for? What is the ultimate legacy you want to leave behind? And so that second community is going to be a personal growth community where I can guide you and help the community, plus the members of that community will be able to help one another. So all that is coming very soon. I'm in the last phase of creating these online communities and to create the first two masterclasses that will be available to the members of that community. Now, if you are a patron, you will be grandfathered in. So whatever rate you are currently paying as a patron will be the rate that will be available for you as when we migrate you over to these new communities. For new members, however, the price is going to go up because I want these both these communities to provide like high value content. And in case you're wondering, but you're a priest, aren't you supposed to do this stuff for free? Well, in fact, that's what I've been doing for the past 20 years. Most of my content is and will still remain free, whether it is these podcasts or what I do on YouTube and TikTok. I just want to create an extra layer of the way in which I want to be available to my community. And that's why I'm creating these two membership options. Now, this is all going to be explained in much more detail in this week's episode of The Walk. Plus, if you are subscribed to my weekly newsletter, my Diary of a Media Priest, then I will send you very soon written explanations on how you can move from your current Patreon subscription to the new community on my new website. And again, the tier that you are currently engaged in on TikTok will be grandfathered in. Now, this is of course no longer the case for new people that want to join this experience. So this is one of the perks of being a patron. I want to really thank my patrons for their support over the last years. It's without them, I wouldn't be able to do this work. I'm not paid by the Vatican or by my bishop or by anyone else. So I completely 100% rely on donations to be able to bring you these podcasts and the TikToks and the YouTube videos and everything else. So, and one last thing, if you haven't signed up yet for my weekly newsletter, this is the week to do so, if you want to stay in the loop about these online communities. And I have a new book that I'm going to give you for free if you subscribe to my newsletter. And of course, everyone who is already subscribed to my newsletter, you already have received an email with a link to the download of the new book. The book is called Easter for Geeks. And this covers the 50 days between Easter morning and Pentecost morning. So that's 50 days, hence the word Pentecost, which penta in Greek means 50. So it's the 50 days between Easter and Pentecost. And for every day, I've taken one of my heroes, one of the main characters from movies, TV shows, animation, video games even, and I created illustrations. And then I wrote like fictional prayers of these various characters. So today, for instance, there is a Batman prayer because Batman is not just about darkness and about revenge and whatnot, but Batman is also about hope and standing strong and protecting the weak. And so every hero of the stories that we love so much has a particular angle that you can connect to the message of Jesus and to the gospel and to the theme of the resurrection and life and the protection of life. And so it's a fun book. I wrote it in such a way and illustrated it in such a way that it is interesting for both for, you know, adult geeks, but also perhaps for their children or even grandchildren. This is a great little book that you can download, put it on your iPad, and read one of those prayers with the kids before they go to bed or before you have dinner together. And because of the illustrations that are very colorful, very vibrant, it's also something that you can just look at. So sometimes I get asked questions, why is it in English? I not speak English very well. Yoda sometimes emails me. And I was like, well, there's pictures as well. So you just enjoy the pictures. Anyway, so you can get that book for free by going to mediapriest.com/free. So that is mediapriest.com/free.
How do you not like movies?
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl, and that kid sees dead people, and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm gonna give it to you.
I've been really enjoying some new series that I'm watching. Well, actually, I have already talked about those series, but I'm watching new episodes of them. And I've finally started to watch Discovery Season 4. Star Trek Discovery will soon begin its fifth and final season. And then after that, of course, there is a lot more Star Trek to look forward to. There's going to be a new series about Starfleet Academy that I'm super excited about. There's going to be a movie. And there's still lots and lots of rumors about the fourth installment of the Kelvin timeline movie. So there will be one final movie to conclude the story with the alternate timeline Star Trek that was launched by J.J. Abrams. Now, that is not my favorite Star Trek. In fact, I think it's almost not Star Trek, but it is still super interesting. Usually the quality of those movies, the way it looks and the action, it's a popcorn Star Trek. So it's not really science fiction, but it's an action movie disguised as Star Trek. But I'm looking forward to that as well. And I hope they also conclude the timeline. I hope they just wrap it all up so that we can go back to the one timeline that truly matters, and that is the official one. Because the whole Kelvin thing was basically, I think, an easy way to reboot the franchise without completely rebooting the entire universe. And I'm so glad that they came up with this idea of a parallel timeline. We're now very used to that kind of multiverse thinking, but at the time that was still relatively new. Because in this way, you can also bring that to a close and we can go back to the original timeline without having to do yet another reboot. So there's that. Discovery, I'm currently watching the fourth season, which is a little bit on the slow side, I have to say. It's the one thing that immediately in the first episode was grating again. I forgot how much it annoyed me in the previous seasons. Now, don't get me wrong, I still do like Star Trek Discovery. I think there are lots and lots of great things in there, but there's this one thing that really annoys me, and that is that everybody is either smiling broadly to one another. So everybody is like super encouraging. Like someone, at one point, there is the captain of the ship and she has a conversation with some alien. And then the conversation wraps up and then she walks back to her chair and then all the team members, all the members of the bridge crew are smiling at her and like nodding with encouragement. And I'm thinking, it's just been a conversation. Come on. There is no reason for all these admiring glances. It just makes it feel so, I don't know, it's like hippie Star Trek. It's too much. It's over the top. So it's either that or it is completely unreasonable crying where everybody is like going through the biggest heartbreak, but it's undeserved. The story itself doesn't have that emotional weight. So these actors feel like they're overacting all the time. And this is my biggest gripe with the way that Star Trek Discovery, not really why the way it's written, but the way it's directed. And I don't know why that is. It's completely absent in any other incarnation of Star Trek, but on the Discovery Bridge, it's all like, oh yes, oh, you're so brave, and oh my goodness, I so cry for you, and it's so horrible, oh my gosh, but you're still so amazing, and like, can we tone it down a little bit and have some adult behavior here on the bridge? I found an amazing TikTok account of a guy who gives his comments. He's just sitting in his car, and he's going over these various incarnations of Star Trek, from the original series to the J.J. Abrams movies, to the Deep Space Nine, and you name it. And his commentary, his TikTok account is not even about that per se, but at one point he just got into doing these Star Trek commentaries, and it is some of the most astute, some of the most brilliant commentary I've ever seen about Star Trek as a franchise. And he explains why some Star Trek series work and feel like Star Trek and why some others completely miss the mark. And I've rarely seen something as brilliant as that. While I'm talking to you, I'm trying to find that account. And of course, as usual, I can't find it because I should have put this in place before I started podcasting. But I would love to play a clip from, and I hope I saved a clip somewhere, but now I really can't find it. I normally have like an entire list in my OneNote account where I post all this stuff, and it's called Podcasting Ideas, Podcast Topic Ideas. Here we are. So let me scroll down and let me see if I can find that particular account. I wish I had someone who could look this up while I'm podcasting. And of course, I've saved a lot of other videos that I'm going to discuss later on in this show. I got hooked on a guy who posts the most amazing food tips for Rome, and it's all these restaurants that I did not know existed, and it is so fascinating and so amazing. So now I want to go back to Rome and try to find all these places where you can get the most affordable and most amazing food. So I cannot find any of these videos. That is such a shame. Anyway, I will include a link in the show notes. Because if you're a Star Trek fan, you really want to check out this TikToker. I should get in touch with him. He's absolutely brilliant. Maybe I should do an interview with him. Anyway, let's go back to what I was doing, which was, what was I doing again? I was recording a show. I'm totally distracted. So what else did I watch? I continue to watch the Three Body Problem. I currently have watched the penultimate episode, so I'm going to watch the finale right after I'm done recording this show. It is so good. It is really amazing science fiction. Sometimes a bit hard to watch. All these themes are so wow. It's really the quality science fiction. It goes into all these big questions. What if there is this contact that we have with extraterrestrials? And what if they respond to our call with like, oh, we're coming to invade you, but it's not going to be tomorrow. It's going to be in four centuries. And so this is all about, in what I call in theology, eschatology. So it's what's to come, but it's like the return of Jesus, which is part of the Christian tradition, to believe that, you know, at one point in the future, nobody knows when, history will come to an end and Christ will return in glory. There will be the final judgment. And there's this constant tension between, you want to keep that hope alive, and it's also, of course, giving you an incentive to do well, because you never know when Christ is going to return, so you want to be at your best at all times. And at the same time, there is this inability to predict when this is going to happen, or even the modality of that return of Christ. How do we even imagine that? Jesus is not going to come down in a flying saucer. So it is a return on a metaphysical level. So it's so hard, even in theology, to think about that in a good way. It's so easy to fall into simplifications, like you see in sometimes in these very fundamentalist Christian denominations, where they keep predicting the return of Christ, and it's all about, you know, the end of the world. So give me all your money and you'll go to heaven, that sort of stuff. And Catholic theology is usually a lot more careful and prudent, and but it's the same. You see the same tension in the three body problem. Like, okay, we know that these aliens are coming, but it's only going to be in 4 centuries. So does that really impact my life? I won't even be alive when they are here. So why don't I just live my life and leave it to the next generation? This is also, of course, kind of in a mirror how we often talk about climate change and our responsibility to hand over this planet to the generations after us. We won't be around when the consequences of our consumerist behavior will impact the planet in such a way that entire parts of the world, this is already going on right now, entire parts of the world will become inhabitable because of, you know, these incredible fluctuations in the weather and floods and you name it. And so how can you take this predicted future seriously if at the same time you don't see any of it? Doesn't really come close to home. And with the return of Christ, it's kind of that same tension. And in the three body problem also, like in the time of the first churches, like Saint Paul, he talks about this, there was this expectation among a lot of Christians that the return of Christ, it was imminent. He could literally return next week. And then even St. Paul already is trying to mitigate that a little bit. It's like, well, you know what? It may actually take a while. We don't know. So why don't you just live a good life right now so that you are prepared if Christ returns? And if he doesn't come right away, then still, you know, don't go sell all your stuff, but be responsible. So he already struggles with this tension between it could be tomorrow, it could also be in 2,000 years from now. And now we're 2,000 years later, and we're still waiting and praying for the return of Christ at one point. So that's what I love so much about the three-body problem. The story itself has a lot of, like, extra dimensions that we know from, you know, things like how to deal with future predictions that at the same time are so far away that we fail to act upon it because we think it's, you know, for my grandchildren, who cares? Well, of course, if you have grandchildren, then you might actually want to care. We are responsible for the future of our children and grandchildren. So that sometimes helps, having a family. Then it becomes much more closer to home because you want your children to grow up in a world that has a future. Right? So anyway, lots and lots of thoughts about the three-body problem. I continue to watch The Bad Batch, which is the Star Wars animated series. It's cool. It's not really great. It's of course, geared towards families and children, and it's good for that. I was expecting something a little bit more, I don't know, a bit deeper. It's kind of the same vibe as the previous seasons, which is okay. I enjoy watching it, but it's not my favorite Star Wars at all. And I kind of hoped that for this last season, they would bring the storytelling to another level, but it's okay. It's kind of a way to bridge the time until we get the Acolyte. And I have much higher hopes for that series. I'm also really hoping that we will get a sequel to Ahsoka. According to rumors, they're going to start filming that this year. So that is exciting. Of course, we have still Andor to look forward to. So both for Star Trek and for Star Wars, there are a lot of things to look forward to. And then finally, I'm listening to a number of podcast reviews from Streaming Things. I think that's the name of the podcast. It's hosted, among other people, by one of the movie TikTokers that I follow. And I really like his short reviews on TikTok. And so I discovered that he had a podcast, started listening to that. And with some other people, he's doing a re-review of the original Star Wars movies. And he makes it clear at the beginning of each podcast review that he's never been a fan of the prequels. So he gives his unfiltered commentary, whereas some of the other members of the panel are very much in love with the prequels, and that was Star Wars when they grew up, so they have very fond memories of that. And it was refreshing to listen to both perspectives on the prequels and to hear what's good and what's not so good. And I have a very mixed relationship myself to the Star Wars prequels. On the one hand, it's been an amazing time in my life when I witnessed the production and pre-production of the Star Wars prequels. That was when I had one of the most visited Star Wars websites in the world. And I've gone to the United States for the premiere of The Phantom Menace. I visited Skywalker Ranch. I was at the first Star Wars celebration. So it was an amazing time to be a Star Wars fan because we had been without Star Wars for decades. And all of a sudden, Star Wars was back. But in hindsight, the prequels were not as good as I expected them to be. And especially the first two movies were a bit disappointing. The first one, I blamed it on the fact that I knew already so much about the spoilers, about the story, that I couldn't watch the movie without constantly comparing it to what I already knew. So there was not much surprise to The Phantom Menace. I had the entire script months before the movie premiered. The next movie, The Attack of the Clones. I was like, has Clone Wars? No, Attack of the Clones. I remember when I watched, I hadn't followed any spoilers. I knew nothing about that movie, so I watched it in theaters. It was the entire story was completely new to me. And I remember that I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. But then later on, when I rewatched it, I started to dislike it more and more. And now it's actually, in my eyes, the worst movie of all 9 Star Wars movies. And this has mostly got to do with the way in which Hayden Christensen was directed. It was so hard to believe how he could so quickly switch from this young, nice boy on Tatooine to this bitter, jealous, whiny student of Obi-Wan Kenobi. There was so much wrong with that portrayal and the way in which George Lucas directed it and wrote it. And also the relationship with Padme was so weird. Why would she hang out with a guy like that? I seriously never believed it. And that, for me, became even worse in the third movie, The Revenge of the Sith, where Anakin makes this huge moral leap from the light side to the dark side, or maybe he was already meddling with the dark side. And then after he becomes the pupil of Palpatine, he starts murdering children. And it's like, what? Come on. If this had been a television series and we would have had 5 seasons to watch this progression, then yeah, I think there are ways to make this believable. But in the span of one movie, it was way too fast. It was undeserved, and there were so many holes in the story. So when people complain about the sequels and say, oh, those stories are so bad, so many plot holes, I always wonder, did you ever really analyze the prequels and how deficient those stories were? The third movie, for many people, was a redemption of the prequel trilogy and a payoff. And I remember that when I watched that third movie, again, I just didn't care that much for the story. It just, even the climactic fight between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin was, yeah, okay, so they fight, and so he gets burned, and then he gets the Darth Vader costume. But there was no real, there was no surprise. There was, I don't know, it just, it didn't do much emotionally with me. And this is also the one Star Wars film that I've only seen a few times. I never really went back to the Revenge of the Sith. I just never cared for that movie. I mean, I don't hate it. Don't get me wrong. But it's, for me, a bit like The Bad Batch. I'll watch it, but I'm never going to rewatch The Bad Batch. Whereas I do actually do that with the original trilogy and even with the sequel trilogy. Those movies, for me, do much more emotionally than the prequel movies. And it was interesting to hear both sides of the argument on that podcast. And I see the merits of what George Lucas tried to do with the prequels. I can also understand that for a lot of people, this is their Star Wars. This is what they grew up with. And I also really understand the criticism on those movies. And now I actually really want to go back and rewatch that trilogy and form my own opinions about it, because it's been years since I watched any of the prequels. So, all right, I think that's more than enough for this episode of the movie and TV segment. Let's talk about superstition.
Catholics rock!
Here at the Peculiar Bunch, we're always happy to tell you everything you always wanted to know about Catholics, but you were afraid to ask.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
And today, I actually have a question from my own community over at our Discord server, and it's about superstition.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
Now, technically, it's not about superstition per se, but there are some elements in this question that makes me want to talk a little bit about superstition, even in certain Catholic practices. So let me give you some background to this question. This was Jeannie, and she posted on Discord. I found this recently in an old prayer booklet belonging to my grandmother. It's a novena. And she posted a photo of a very short prayer, which was cut out from a booklet. The paper itself is completely yellow now. It's clearly very old, maybe from the 50s. So let me read what that clip says. So above it says St. Jude's Novena. A novena is 9 days of prayer. This is still an existing devotional practice where for 9 days you pray a certain prayer. So here's the text on that leaflet. May the Sacred Heart of Jesus be adored, glorified, loved, and preserved throughout the world, now and forever. Sacred Heart of Jesus, have mercy on us. St. Jude, worker of miracles, pray for us. St. Jude, helper of the hopeless, pray for us. And then it stipulates how you should pray this novena. And here, you know, the prayer itself, it's kind of a standard Catholic prayer, nothing too fancy. This is one word that is a little bit strange, like, may the Sacred Heart of Jesus be preserved throughout the world. I'm thinking, how does that work? Maybe our language has changed a little bit over the decades, but I don't see how you can preserve the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Anyway, but then, it's much more about the second part of the novena prayer. It says, say this prayer 9 times a day. So it's not just for 9 days, but say it 9 times per day. That is not necessarily always the case with novenas, but anyway, still won't hurt to pray 9 times. By the 8th day, your prayer will be answered, it says. So by the 8th day, your prayer will be answered. Say it for 9 days. It has never been known to fail, is the second guarantee that they give here. And then it wraps up by saying publication must be promised. And then it ends with, thank you, St. Jude, and all the saints for requests granted. Now, it's that middle part that is so weird. And so, especially like by the eighth day, your prayer will be answered. And I'm thinking, okay, so that sounds a little bit like Aladdin's magic lamp, you know, the genie of the lamp. Just rub the lamp eight times and all your wishes will be fulfilled. It's a prayer. It's up to God to decide how he wants to hear our prayers. You know, so you cannot say as a human, do this and God will do exactly what you ask him. Doesn't make sense. That's not how the Force works, Han Solo would tell Finn. So, but if you read it precisely, it says your prayer, meaning this novena prayer, will be answered. What was that prayer? May the Sacred Heart of Jesus be adored, glorified, loved, and preserved throughout the world now and forever. Sacred Heart of Jesus, have mercy on us. St. Jude, worker of miracles, pray for us. St. Jude, helper of the hopeless, pray for us. If that is your prayer, then formally I would say yes. By praying that for 8 days, you have fulfilled what the prayer asks, namely, the Sacred Heart of Jesus, through your prayer, is adored, glorified, loved, and preserved throughout the world. Well, throughout the world, that is still up for debate, but and now and forever, that still remains to be seen, but at least you've done your part. So that part of the prayer has been heard to a certain extent. You actually made it happen, what you prayed, which is also, this is how prayers work. Prayers are not going to change God. God is immutable. God does not change. His love remains the same whether we pray or not, whether we love him back or not. But prayer changes us. It changes the way in which we live our lives. And so prayer makes us more open to receive God's love, but he's going to give it to us whether we pray or not. It's whether we accept it or not that determines whether we will experience that love or not. So it's this is a big, important thing in Catholic thinking about prayer. Prayer does not change God's mind. And you may actually be tempted to think that because in the Bible, it's often presented like that, especially in the Old Testament, where, you know, people pray and God thinks about the, and it's like, okay, so I'm not going to destroy that city. And it's thanks to the prayer that God changes his mind. But that is a human projection onto God. God does not change. We change through our prayer. So this is kind of how you could interpret that you know, addition under the prayer. If you pray this, then yes, you are actually doing what you pray for. Namely, you love God by your virtue of your prayer, and you spread this veneration for the love of Jesus throughout the world because you are part of that world. But then here it becomes dicey. Say it for 9 days, and it has never been known to fail. So that seems to contradict or at least put in question the previous guarantee that if you pray this 8 days, then it's already answered. So you could say, okay, so I can skip the ninth day. But no, say for 9 days, and then it really won't fail. This feels a little bit like a bad car salesman, you know? Like, this car has been owned by this old lady. She's barely driven this. Maybe once a month she took this to go get groceries. And even if she had used it every day, she's still a very careful driver. So she really takes care of her car. So, you know, even if she used it for more than once a month, immediately you know that the guy has been lying about the fact that the old lady has been using this once a month. This sounds a bit like the same. So 8 days, guaranteed, it'll work. Your prayers is going to be heard. But say it for 9 days, and it really won't fail. It's like, okay, so what was wrong with the 8 days then? But then, this is the worst. Publication must be promised. So, in fact, in addition to your prayer, you also have to publish this. You have to spread this prayer. And if you don't promise to spread this, then it won't work. You can pray as much as you want, but it won't work. Publication must be promised. So that's a requisite, it is obligatory. that feels, and so here's the commentary of Jeannie. She says, this almost reminds me of those chain letters that people used to send out when I was little, scaring people into thinking that bad luck would befall them if it wasn't passed on. You also see this on the internet, by the way, on Facebook. I've seen plenty of stuff like this where you have to, you know, spread this image to 15 of your followers and the next day you will be rich or something like that. It's a pyramid scheme. It almost makes the novena, this is Jeannie, it almost makes the novena seem like superstition. Am I wronging this? I suppose by sharing it here, I'm publishing it anyway. So let us know, Jeannie, did you win the lottery after posting this on Discord? If so, then I'm going to repost this as well. The question remains, what does the church say about these things? Well, the church doesn't really pronounce itself on these individual things, obviously. But in general, you could say that it is theologically very dicey, very dangerous ground to say that a prayer is certainly going to be heard if you do this and this and this and this, because it turns prayer into magic, right? As long as you say Aloha Mora, or Wingardium Leviosa, it is going to work. But if you say it wrong, Wingardium Leviosa, then your feather is going to explode in flames. Prayer does not work like that, seriously. God is not a bean counter. So this is the same thing when it comes to, you know, you have to pray this 9 times per day for 8 days, and then an additional 9th day, and then it will work. Do you really think that that is how God wants us to pray? Do you ever read in the gospel Jesus talking about prayer like that? Like, if you pray, go to your room and make sure that for 8 days you pray 9 times per day to my Father in heaven. And then if you publish this prayer on the 9th day and you pray that 9th day, then I guarantee you that God, my Father, will hear anything you ask for. Now, Jesus says, if you pray, go to your room, close the door, make sure that nobody knows that you're praying, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. And woe those who pray in public and, you know, want the world to see how pious they are. There's a little bit of this that could apply to this novena. If you publish this prayer out of superstition that if you do that, then God magically will hear your prayers, as if God is a genie in a bottle, then I think you're actually risking that God will ignore that prayer, because you're not in the right disposition. Your heart isn't truly open for God's help in however form it comes. No, you want to game the system. You want to force God into doing what you want God to do. That is the opposite of faith. That is manipulation. That is magical belief. And so, but of course, that's not probably what the creator of this novena prayer thought. He or she thought, well, this is a way to encourage people to pass on this prayer so it will start to spread. This is way before the internet. So this was a way to make sure that people would amplify this message. It's kind of like a prehistoric version of what we do with our videos when we hope it goes viral. When does a TikTok video go viral? When you share it with other people. When you post the link and post it on your Facebook page, and the algorithm will see that, it will amplify it, and so good things happen to your video and maybe also to you if you can somehow monetize that. So that is probably the idea behind this. But I'm pretty sure that the creator of this novena never thought about the negative consequences of this and how it can make people believe that prayer is like a magic formula. And if you only say the words correctly and you put the emphasis on the Leviosa and not Leviosa, then God will make that feather flow. Again, I have to quote Han Solo time and again. That's not how the Force works. Hope that helps. And with that, it is time to wrap things up. thank you so much for spending some time with me listening to The Break. If you are a patron, of course, there is an extra long version, a premium version of The Break, in which I will talk about my recent food discoveries in Rome, or at least discoveries that I need to go find next time that I'm in Rome. I also want to talk a little bit more about technology, and to be more specific, how I use AI to help systemize my thoughts. And then I want to talk about an amazing PlayStation game that is coming to PC in the month of May. And this may be one of those premium games that I'm going to buy on day one. It's that good. It's called Ghost of Tsushima. And a friend of mine is currently working on the final stages of the development of that PC version of the game. And I want to talk a little bit more about it in the premium part of the show. So thank you so much. And stay tuned. Make sure to subscribe to my newsletter over at mediapriest.com/free. Or if you don't care for the book, you can go to mediapriest.com/diary. Because in one of my next updates, I will give you all the information you need to know about how to become a member of my two new membership communities. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll talk soon. God bless.